Welcome back to Cool Science Radio. I'm Chris Cherniak here with Lynn Ware Peake. Our next guest, Steve Brusati, is a paleontologist at the University of Edinburgh in Scotland. He writes frequently for Scientific American, including a cover story on the evolution of tyrannosaurs. He's written a new book called The Rise and Fall of the Dinosaurs, A New History of a Lost World. Brusati gives us a sweeping scientific history of the dinosaurs in narrative form and tells us why today is the golden age of paleontology and why dinosaurs have always and continue to fascinate humans. Steve Brusati, welcome to Cool Science Radio.
Thank you very much for having me.
Well, I'm going to start here. It's a big, bold title, A New History of a Lost World. Give us the thumbnail sketch or so of why this is a new, what makes this a new history?
Well, in one sense, it's new because it's a bit different of a book. This is a book about dinosaurs for adults. It's an adult pop science book, a narrative type of book. And there's just not so many of those about dinosaurs. There's so many books for kids about dinosaurs, hundreds of them, probably thousands of them. Mm-hmm. But this is a little bit different in that regard. But also, it is a new story, and it is a story. It's the story of dinosaur evolution from their origins, to their rise to dominance, to how some of them became enormous and how other ones evolved into birds, and how the rest of them went extinct. And this is a story that we've really only been able to piece together over the last decade or so during this new golden age of paleontology, where somebody right now is finding a new species of dinosaur on average once a week somewhere around the world,
wow,
including Utah, which is a big epicenter now. So there's just so much new information, so many new fossils, so many new technologies being used to study these fossils. And because of that, we now know more about the history of dinosaurs than we've ever known before.
I'm so glad that you said that this is for adults. And when I was driving into the station this morning, I was thinking about who your target audience might be. And I thought, you know, when we were young girls and boys, we were fascinated by dinosaurs. And then somehow our imagination and our creativity sort of gets lost. And
it moves on.
And here we are, these adults, you know, commuting to work and sitting in offices. And I thought, this is such a thrilling book to, you know, to be able to recapture your fascination for dinosaurs that you used, that you had as a kid. Yet it's for the adult. And I was thinking about, do you have the book in front of you? Because I was going to ask you to read from it.
I do have a copy of the book. I just have to dig it out of my bag here. So I'm actually talking to you from London, and the book has just been published in the UK today. So we're kind of running around like headless dinosaur chickens,
right,
doing all this stuff. So let me pull it out of the bag. So I got a copy of it here.
The headless dinosaur chicken, that's not one of the new 15 species that you've discovered recently, is that right?
It's not, but
not yet.
We're finding so many strange new dinosaurs. Who's to say we won't find one, you know, tomorrow?
Right.
Well, so on page 200 at the top, you've just sort of gone through this physical description that's really nice of the T-Rex. And there's a nice picture of it on the previous page. But I was wondering if you could just read the first three or four lines from the top of page 200. The seat of Rex's power was in its head.
Okay, cool. And thanks for having me do this. This makes me feel like a real literary person, a real writer here reading from the book. Let me go. This is in chapter 6, and this is in the chapter that is what I call the unauthorized biography of the king of dinosaurs. So the chapter that's about T-Rex and everything that we've learned about T-Rex, what T-Rex was like as a real living, breathing, moving, feeding, growing dinosaur. So, okay, page 200. Mm. The seat of Rex's power was in its head. It was a killing machine, a torture chamber for its prey, and an evil mask all in one. At around 5 feet long from snout to ear, the skull was nearly the length of an average person. More than 50 knife-sharp teeth made for a sinister smile. There were little nipping teeth at the front of the snout and a row of serrated spikes the size and shape of bananas running along the sides of the upper and lower jaws. Muscles to open and close those jaws bulged out of the back of the head near the bottle cap-sized hole that served as the ear. Each eyeball was the size of a grapefruit. In front of it, but covered in skin, was a massive sinus system that helped to lighten the head, and then the big fleshy horns at the tip of the snout. Small horns protruded in front of and behind each eye, and another stuck downwards from each cheek. Gnarly knobs of bone covered in keratin, the same stuff that makes up our fingernails. Imagine this hideous visage as your last memory before the teeth came crushing down, breaking your bones. Many a dinosaur met its end that way.
That's so great.
Fun, isn't it?
So how long was, say, T-Rex and other dinosaurs around? How many millions of years, and how many, what was their arc of evolution in either form of intelligence or growth, et cetera?
That's the story that I try to tell in the book, that story arc of dinosaur history. And it was a long history. The dinosaurs were around for over 150 million years.
Wow.
So they were an empire, and that's how I like to think of them. That's why I gave it this title of The Rise and Fall of the Dinosaurs, you know, and kind of paying homage to the rise and fall of the Roman Empire, because I want people to see dinosaurs as one of the great dynasties of evolution and one of the great success stories in the history of life. So often we think of dinosaurs as failures, as these animals that went extinct. They died out. They were unsuccessful. They failed. People are often using the word dinosaur as an insult towards washed-up celebrities or out-of-touch politicians, but really that could be that's the opposite of what dinosaurs were. They were a great success story, and they rose up from very humble beginnings way back in the Triassic period after this horrible mass extinction where supervolcanoes killed off up to 95% of all species. And dinosaurs came in the aftermath of that as the world was healing. But it took them quite a long time to rise up and grow to huge sizes and become these dominant, iconic animals like T-Rex and Brontosaurus that we all know and love.
You know, you talk about Utah being sort of an epicenter now of paleontology, and you also make a reference to the golden age of paleontology. And what is it? Is it our technology that is allowing us to make greater discovery about dinosaurs that we didn't have in the past? And what specifically is going on in Utah?
Yeah, so on the whole, it's really two things that are making this a golden age now. First of all, people are finding more fossils than ever before. People are finding more dinosaurs than ever before. And that's because there are more people looking than ever before. It used to be that the only people who looked for dinosaurs were these old, posh, you know, elitist academic scientist types, often in Ivy League universities in the East Coast of the U.S. or in the U.K. But now paleontology and especially dinosaur research has become a global game, and people have found dinosaurs on every single continent. And right now it's often younger people, people of my generation, people that are trained in their home countries, especially in places like China and Argentina and Brazil, some of the great developing countries of the world. Local scientists are being trained, and they are going out and finding their own dinosaurs. And so that's part of it. But the other part of it is that we do have a lot of new technology, that once we find these dinosaur bones, we can use those technologies to study them, to really understand what these dinosaurs were like as real animals. So, for instance, CAT scanning, to look inside the skulls of dinosaurs, to see what the brain looked like, see what the sense organs were like, get a feel for how intelligent dinosaurs were, or computer animation software that can help us understand how dinosaurs moved, or really high-powered microscopes that can even tell what color dinosaurs were. And all of this work is going on all over the world, but Utah has become a really important place. I mean, all the way back to the late 1800s, Utah was a very important place for early dinosaur discoveries, but over the last 20 years, it's in Grand Staircase, where so many important new dinosaur species have been found, and that's why many of us in the paleontology community are so worried about what's happening at Grand Staircase. As the president has shrunk the boundaries of that park, leaving many of the richest dinosaur areas unprotected, and opening up that park to drilling and to oil and mineral exploration. So hopefully that will not affect too greatly the dinosaurs there, because this is a treasure trove. This is one of the world's best new places to find dinosaurs, and only a tiny percentage of that park has been explored because it is so rugged and it is so remote. So there are many great paleontologists in Utah, and especially a lot of students at the University of Utah who are making their careers studying these dinosaurs.
I can't help but also think about poaching. What is the degree of poaching that goes on in illegal acquisition of dinosaurs?
Yeah, good question, and a little bit of a depressing question, to be honest, because poaching does happen. Fossils can be commodities, especially dinosaurs, because their bones are so rare. And sometimes, you know, if you find a skeleton, the bones can be beautifully preserved, and they just look really nice. They look like a museum piece. They look like something out of an art museum oftentimes. And so that means that there are a lot of people around the world who want to acquire dinosaurs. And the laws differ in every country. In the U.S., if you find fossils on your own land, you can do with them as you please. I think that's a very American thing that fits with our system, with our style, with our national ethos. On public land, though, on protected land, national park land, of course, but any sort of Bureau of Land Management land, though, those fossils can only be collected by accredited institutions, so museums and universities. But in other countries, it's different. In some countries like China and Mongolia, you cannot, no matter, even if you find them on your own land, you cannot sell dinosaur fossils. They cannot leave the country. And so if you see a dinosaur up for auction that comes from Mongolia or China, you know automatically that that is illegal. Laws have been broken as that's been taken across boundaries. And there have been several high-profile cases recently where some of those fossils have been seized by the government and returned, particularly to Mongolia. So it's a sad thing when that happens, because dinosaur fossils, each one is a clue. Each fossil is a new clue that can tell us something about the history of life, and it's a shame whenever we lose any of them.
Mm, absolutely. And thank you so much for giving us that insight into Grand Staircase, another reason that our national monuments need to be preserved as they are.
And stay the size that they are.
Right.
Not shrunken. Sorry, there's our little opinion there, for our Utah opinion there, Steve.
Absolutely, and I agree with that totally, and the Society of Vertebrate Paleontology, which is the major professional organization, is part of a lawsuit taking the White House to court over that, and they've teamed up with many other partners, environmental organizations, Native American tribes, to raise this issue legally. So there's a long way to go in that battle. It's really important that we maintain our interest in that, because Grand Staircase, it really is a jewel. It really, really, really is. And I don't know the number off the top of my head, but it's probably something like 20 or 30 new species of dinosaur that have come out of there over the last few decades, and that is astounding, and we have so much more to learn there. And that's true around the world, too. There's a lot more to be learned. Mm. And for the younger generation of dinosaur enthusiasts out there, it's important to know we're not running out of fossils. You know, we are just getting started, and there's a lot to learn. And as I've written this book, I tell the story of dinosaur evolution, but there are still gaps in that story. There are still big mysteries to be solved. Mm-hmm. And at places like Grand Staircase, where people are finding new fossils that will help solve these remaining mysteries.
If you're just joining us, our guest is Steve Brusati. He's the author of a new book called The Rise and Fall of the Dinosaurs, A New History of a Lost World. We're talking about the golden age of paleontology. And let's move into some other topics. You had spoken a few moments ago about the technology that enables us to see more about possibly the intelligence of dinosaurs. They were smarter than we previously thought. How so?
That's right. And this is a big revelation of the past decade or so, because even when I was in school, and it wasn't that long ago, it was in the late 80s and then throughout the 90s, I just remember all these dinosaur books in the classroom and in the school library, and they all said the same thing. They all portrayed dinosaurs as these big, lumbering, drab-colored, dim-witted beasts that were just languishing around, just waiting to go extinct. And we now know that that's the completely wrong picture of dinosaurs. They were almost opposite to that in every way. They were much more active and energetic and dynamic and successful, and they were also much more intelligent than we used to think. And we know that because CAT scanning has allowed us to look into the heads of dinosaurs, into their skulls, And that allows us to see the brain cavity. It allows us to build digital models of the brain. We can see the size and shape of the brain. We can then compare that to modern animals. We can do that with other sense organs like the ears as well. And what that's revealed is that a lot of dinosaurs were really quite intelligent. And some of these meat-eating dinosaurs like T-Rex and Velociraptor, their brains relative to their body size were in the vicinity of dogs and cats and maybe even up into some primates. So these were not dumb animals. These were intelligent animals, very well adapted to the world around them. And their intelligence was an integral part of their toolkit of predatory weapons. It wasn't just all brawn that made these meat-eating dinosaurs so scary. It was also the fact that they were really brainy, too.
All right, we got a few more minutes. I want to get to the extinction part, the part that now dinosaurs go through several realms of extinction or loss and recovery. But the big extinction moment, some 66 million years ago, asteroid, comet, what happens?
This is the fall of the dinosaurs. And it's very different than the rise of the dinosaurs. The rise of the dinosaurs was this long, tortured, slow process that took about 50 million years from the humble, cat-sized ancestors of dinosaurs to become the big, colossal creatures that we all know. But the fall of the dinosaurs was something that literally happened one day. It happened one day when an asteroid hit, and not just any normal asteroid, the biggest asteroid that's hit the Earth over the last half a billion years. This was a 6-mile-wide rock that was traveling faster than a jetliner that smashed into the Earth with the force of over a billion nuclear bombs, and it punched a hole in the crust over 100 miles wide, and almost immediately it triggered a cascade, a domino effect of environmental destruction. Tsunamis, wildfires, earthquakes, hurricane-force winds, and these things reshaped the planet in a matter of moments, hours, days, weeks. And the dinosaurs couldn't cope with this very sudden climate and environmental change, and they all died out except for a few species of birds, which evolved from dinosaurs and made it through. And some of the other things that made it through were some of these small, furry little creatures that were scurrying around in the shadows, these little mammals that were the ancestors of us. And they were small, and they were agile, they were adaptable, they could hide really easily, they could eat a lot of different foods. That was the winning hand of cards to survive that global meltdown. And those animals, very quickly, once the dinosaurs died, they started to proliferate. They evolved into big animals, into dominant animals, into the first primates, and that started that evolutionary domino chain that led to us.
So that asteroid struck in the Yucatan Peninsula. If you go there now, we think the Yucatan Peninsula. I think I remember hearing that,
do we know
where it struck?
We do. And it took a while to find the crater because the idea that an asteroid hit the Earth and killed off the dinosaurs, that was originally based on geological evidence, on the types of rocks that were preserved from that moment in time and the composition of those rocks. They had a chemical signature, basically, that came from outer space. And then once that was identified, the search was on to find the crater. And the crater was eventually found in the Yucatan Peninsula. And it's not obvious from the surface because it's mostly offshore, so it's mostly covered by water. And so it's big. It's over 100 miles wide. And right now there's a team of scientists that have been busy drilling that crater in very minute detail, going way down, kilometers deep down. And they are getting a really good understanding of the structure of that crater and exactly how the asteroid hit, exactly how powerful it was. This is some of the most exciting research that's going on, at least in my opinion, in the field of geology right now, and just an example of how, right as we speak, people are using all kinds of tools and techniques to answer some of these big questions about dinosaurs.
That's interesting. So, Steve, I have to, before we let you go, take you back about, I think it was about 4 or 5 years, and there was this big discovery and a huge disappointment for those dinosaur lovers about something some crucial piece of evidence they found out. It was something like Brontosaurus or T-Rex or, you know, one of the big dinosaurs. I don't remember what it was, but let me tell you why it left an impact on me. I went to a live taping of Science Friday in Salt Lake City, and, it was wonderful. They came and they talked about things that were related to Utah, and they did
hanging out with Ira, he was talking about Utah. Very cool.
It was wonderful, but the thing that left the greatest impression on me were the people who would come up, and a lot of kids who would come up and ask these incredible questions about dinosaurs. And this, it was right after this discovery of, you know, it was something like, and I don't know if this is anything is popping into your mind, but it was something horrible like, you know, T-Rex wasn't actually a dinosaur. T-Rex was a bird or something. is there anything that you remember?
You know, to be honest, no, nothing jumps out. But there's so many discoveries and there's so many stories. I mean, it's like once a week now there's some dinosaur news. There was just this big story yesterday about this, one of the earliest bird skulls, you know, being discovered. So I lose track of these things, to be honest with you, because the field's moving so fast. So I don't know, but hopefully it didn't upset the kids too much, because one of the great things about dinosaurs is how they inspire younger generations.
Well, it was very devastating to some of these kids, but and I thought it was very endearing, you know, at the same time.
Well, all right. So for those of us who can't go out and actually physically hunt for dinosaurs, is there any way that we could be armchair paleontologists, that we could one day maybe go online and go to Google Earth or Map and hunt for dinosaurs online in some fashion?
There could be. Now, but for you guys and your listenership, since you're out in Utah, there's real examples to go out and find real dinosaurs. In the University of Utah and the Utah Museum of Natural History, they run volunteer programs. So check those out, anybody who's listening in Salt Lake City or in the vicinity that's interested. But there are things for people like me. I grew up in Illinois in the middle of the cornfields. Not a single dinosaur bone has ever been found in Illinois. And when I was getting interested in dinosaurs as a teenager, I felt kind of helpless there. But what I did, I just went to a lot of museums. I started to follow discoveries on the internet, you know, doing a Google News alert, seeing what was popping up. And that got me into the field. And nowadays, there is a lot of work that can be done. There's lots of work on dinosaur evolution using big databases, for instance, of information. So there's lots of ways that you can contribute to the science, even as an amateur, even if you're not able to go out and physically hack dinosaur bones out of the ground. And the best place to start is to get in touch with your local museums and universities and see what kind of projects and opportunities they have on offer.
You're a professor of paleontology in Scotland, and yet you know about the Natural History Museum of Utah. I love that.
Well done.
Well, some good friends of mine are there, and it really is, you know, honestly, one of the world's great dinosaur collections there, and they keep finding more and more and more. It's the envy of pretty much every other state in the country and a lot of other countries. In Scotland, we have just a handful of dinosaurs that we've found. So a big part of me wishes I had a state like Utah to have as my backyard.
That's great. Well, Steve Brusati, it's been a pleasure speaking with you. The new book is The Rise and Fall of the Dinosaurs, A New History of a Lost World. Steve, thanks for joining us on Cool Science Radio.
Thank you very much for having me on and letting me do what I like to do best, talk about dinosaurs.
Thanks.
That's great. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Cheers. Bye.